Hi guys, how are you? Hi Franco, I have my guest today, Frank Montano, right? That's how you say your last name?
Yeah, correct.
So he is the authority on co-living, or you call it co-housing,
or co-housing, right? Yeah. So, that's the term that's getting a lot of traction right now, co-housing.
I know. Isn't it crazy? Like, but tell people, I mean, first of all, I want to see, who are you?
Yeah.
To just let people know, give a little bit about, you know, and how you got in real estate.
Yeah.
And then we are going to be talking all about co-living. Why do co-living? So take it away. Yes. Tell me your bio. So,
a little bit about me is I've done a little bit of everything. So I've had businesses in about 14, going on 15 industries now. I have started a new company. So about 15 different industries now. So everything from retail to financial services to outsourcing. I had a call center. So now I know outsourcing is really popular now. I got into that industry 18 years ago. So I had a large call center, did that. I had over 300 agents. Did that for many years, as well as much of any of this. And I owned 3 different franchise brands. So, I sold my last one that I owned. So, one I started when I was 20 years old. It was 7-Eleven. I was one of their youngest 7-Eleven franchisees when I was 20. My last franchise that I owned was T-Mobile. And so I sold that business in 2018. I had 42 locations here in California, and I had 750 employees. So that was one of my larger businesses that I ran. I did that for 11 years. And you know, my idea is when I sold that, so how I found my way into real estate is, it's really interesting, was like, so when I sold that business in 2018, and I thought my next transition was to find another company, right? Because, you know, I love the challenge and I love learning new industries. I love that. And so, you know, I looked at several different companies and I came really close to buying a tour bus company. And I got very lucky that I didn't end up buying it, because that would have been a very big problem. But I did during COVID, right? But I almost bought a tour bus company in Las Vegas. And what ended up happening was, during this time, is I sold a couple properties. And so... and it's a really interesting story. And so while I was doing my cell phone business, you know, I bought my primary residence, of course, and I bought a little like vacation property that I put on Airbnb here in California.
That's 2018. Is that 2018?
So my primary I got in 2011, and then my Airbnb I got it in 2015, right? Which was, you know, great time. And so I sold it around the same time. I sold both of them during 2018. So the same time I was selling my company, I figured, you know, I sell because I wanted to get a new primary residence. And so, really interesting story why I kind of, and this is kind of what got me to think into about real estate, was, so first my Airbnb, I bought it with a second home loan, right? So you could put 10% down, low down payment. And one of the great things about real estate is leverage, right? That's where you, like, if you use leverage correctly, right? You could use it the wrong way, but if you use it the right way, right, it could magnify your returns quite a bit. And so I put 10%, I bought this house for $320,000, right? So I put 10% down, around $32,000 plus, you know, some closing costs. And I sold that property, and, you know, it was great as an Airbnb. I sold it 3 years later, right, in 2018, for $650,000, right?
Wow.
So I'm like, wow. So like, okay, I put $32,000 in this thing and I sold it for, I made like over 10x, like over 1,000% return.
Where was it? Like,
this
what
Big
state?
Bear. Big Bear, California.
Okay, so California. Yeah. And you live in California too. Oh my God, beautiful.
Yeah. And so so I sold that. And then at the same time, I also sold my primary residence. Now, when I bought my primary residence, because I always wanted to, I'm always looking to ways to make money on my return. So even when I bought my primary residence, I was really looking what was the next step, right? I just didn't buy a house. So I bought this house in 2011. It was zoned multifamily, okay, from the very beginning. It had a small 1920s house on it. And my intention at the time was, I knew one day I was going to, you know, upgrade, go to a different property. And so I was going to redevelop this property. That was my plan. And so it was in a decent sized lot, you know, here in, for decent size for LA. So this was like 10,000 square foot lot. So in LA, I'm able to build that it's zoned for do a small apartment building or townhouses or something like that. So when I decided that I wanted to sell it, this was around 2016 or so. I was thinking like, okay, I wanted to kind of get preparation either to redevelop it or sell it. And so at the time, I didn't know anything about real estate. Like I was not, like cell phones was my business at the time. And that's all I knew, right? Like I knew retail. I knew my other business I did. I don't know real estate. I never did real estate before. So, but I thought myself like, okay, you know what? I can figure out like maybe, I'll redevelop it and stuff like that. But it's a pretty good sized project. I hired an architect. You know, we did some preliminary studies. We found out we could build 6 townhouses on here. And at the time, and another owner across the street actually did something similar. He actually built it, and he was selling them for $1.2 million each townhouse because it's LA, so LA is expensive,
wow.
Right?
So
I thought like, okay, I'm gonna redevelop this. You know, I'll tear down my old house and I just redevelop this place. You know, but I wasn't comfortable with the whole $3.2 million price tag. Right, it was going to be a pretty big development, especially as a first time real estate investor, right? Like a first project. So I figured that, you know what, if I could find a developer to buy it, take it off my hands, you know, and I get a good return, of course they have to make their return, right? So I understood that, but I didn't have to take on this massive risk, right? That's a first, like a real deal. And
crazy.
So I'm like, let me see what's out there, right? So I put it on the market and, you know, found a developer that wanted to buy it. Here in 2018, because I bought a house in an area that was gentrifying, right? So it wasn't like really popular lit, but it was next to a city that was very expensive and popular. So I knew over time that area that I was in was going to go up in value. And that's what ended up happening. So I bought that house in 2011 for $320,000. So it just so happened it's the same price. I bought it for $320,000 in 2011. And I put 3.5% down. And wow. So I only put in like $11,000 or something like that to buy this house. Okay. And I was able to remove PMI because in 2011 was a time of like right at 2011, like 2012 appreciation started happening. So within 6 months, I was able to refinance that house and have no PMI. So I wasn't paying mortgage insurance or anything like that. Right. So I only have $11,000 down in this house. I owned it. I lived there and I sold that house in 2018 for just under $1.2 million.
Wow, okay. Amazing.
And so,
yes.
So when I sold my company that I worked, you know, really hard into, I sold these two houses and I compare them, right? I look, I'm like, okay, so I bought these two houses and I didn't do anything except live in them. And the other one, I just rented out and I made a crazy return. And then I look over to my company where I have managing 42 locations with 750 people. And
yes.
I'm like, what would I rather do? Like, do I want to go back and do a bunch of that again? Or do I want to just, maybe there's more in this real estate thing that I'm missing. Because I literally like, you know, with like, if you do it right and it's within a relatively short period of time, a pretty substantial life-changing event, right? Like with not a lot of money, right? Like with, and so that's what led me to real estate. That's when I figured like, you know what? And when we were negotiating with my, like some of these other businesses I was looking to buy, I figured like, you know what? Like maybe I want to do real, let me try real estate. Maybe real estate is where I need to be. And that's what led me to real estate because like, I felt like there was more there that I was missing. You know, because I thought like some other investors like, oh, real estate is a slow generating thing where, you know, you make money over a long period of time, which is true. But if you do it right, you could actually make money within short periods of time, too.
Yes.
And so I look more into it. But now, so I decided on real estate, but I didn't know real estate is such a big ocean. I didn't know what sector I wanted to get involved in. So I studied every sector for about 6 months. Right. So. You know, I looked into multifamily and I looked into, you know, self-storage and, you know, like all the things that are out there and it's just much. And, you know,
yes.
So I studied every single thing. Like, do I want to do this one?
I call them shiny objects.
Yeah, shiny objects.
You know,
objects.
Like,
so
it's everything.
It's, like, oh, it's so much. And so yes. I narrowed it down and I almost went with an apartment building, right? So I almost bought an apartment building in Tampa around 2019. Okay.
Okay.
It would have been great too, though. Like, if I ended up buying that, Tampa exploded. So it would have been great too. But I figured, like, but I was looking at the return. It was a 32 unit apartment building. It's gonna require a tremendous amount of capital, right? Because I was trying to replace my income, like some of my income that I was making before. And in order to do that, you need a lot of, like, you need to buy a big project in real estate, right? Because, you know,
you need cash flow, you need active income. Yeah. I mean, multifamily is a long term, it's a patient game. It's amazing,
it is. And So I was kind of looking at this apartment building. I was going to get it under contract. And then I was talking with people, because I was still kind of looking at what's out there, like doing research, stuff like that. I was talking with a realtor from Atlanta that said, have you looked into pad split? And I'm all like, what's a pad split? Like, what? What is that? Like, I never heard of that before. And so, he explained it to me. And I'm like, oh, I kind of, like, I remember before, like, a while back, like, referencing or seeing something about, like, co-living and something, but I didn't really look into it. It just wasn't the right time. It just so happened this was the right time. And so I decided, like, oh, let me take a look into it. So when I dug deeper into it, my mind just exploded, right? Like, I was like, what? So this was around, like, early 2019 at this point. And I was looking at co-living. And at the time, Atlanta houses were only, like, $100,000. Right. And this guy was telling me, he's like, oh, yeah, you rent out the rooms, you add the rooms in here, and you're going to get like $45,000, $50,000 a year in rent. I'm like, what? Like, I'm buying this house for $100,000. You're telling me I'm going to get rent of like $45,000,
$50,000?
That's
amazing. That's crazy.
Yeah. And so I'm like, well, this is way better than an apartment building, right? I just got to do more volume. But it's like, I mean, I only need a few houses. Like, I was thinking in my mind, like, okay, like three houses would generate like a huge return. So let me try it. Like, I didn't know if it was going to work. I didn't know, like, what to expect. I didn't know if it was going to be. So I figured, like, okay. And, part of my history, so I used to be a financial advisor way back as well. And so one of the things I learned, in the markets is, always look at your downside first. So whenever I look at something, I always try and analyze the downside. And so when I was looking at it, it's like, okay, worst case scenario, let's say I try this thing and no one rents it and, like, it doesn't work out, or I need to sell the house. Like, what is my downside? And at the time, that downside was only like the PITI was only like $700 a month, right? So I'm like,
wow,
okay, I could swing $700 a month. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
it's worth the risk. Money. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you purchase a property turnkey. Yeah. You rehab it a little bit.
Yeah. So I had to do a rehab, but it was not a value add. It's not like a real big value add at the time. Because so my thought process was, okay, let me underwrite the model. Because then, like, I wanted as minimum, like, least amount of variables first. Right.
Okay.
So I didn't care about trying to, like, gain that extra, appreciation yet.
Yeah.
Because, like, my goal was just to replace my cash flow quickly. Because I, like, at this point, I have, like, about a year and a half or so, without a business or any money coming in. And even though I did have some capital, if you're not, like, if you're used to money coming in, it's not a good feeling when nothing's coming in,
Right.
Like, you want to kind of just like have some money coming in. And so I'm like, okay, let me just test this, see if it works. Like, and then I'll just go, volume. And then I could fine tune it later. Right. Like, I could get in the value adds later when I'm in the business. Right. And so I just wanted to get my foot in the door, even though I know maybe I'm overpaying a little bit at the time for the house, or overpaying on my rehab, which ended up happening. I overpaid on my house and my rehab, but it still worked out. Like, I tell you guys my return on that house, and you'll think it's, even though I overpaid, it's still amazing. So I bought that house for, I think, $120,000. At the time, I could probably gotten better deals if I know what I know now. But, like, I got the house for $120,000 in Atlanta. And I spent about, I think it was like $65,000 on the rehab, which I found over time was a lot, because houses were only 120. So, like, I almost practically rebuilt the house for like 60,000, right? I mean, I should have really paid 30, but I didn't know any better. And I wanted a contractor.
And you're doing stuff from California, right? You didn't move to Georgia.
I'm doing it from California. And so because what I did was I talked to Patsy, and I'm like, okay, I want, who's a tried and true contractor that could get this built? Like, I didn't want to deal with all the other issues and concerns and stuff that other investors, like, I just wanted to get up and running quickly, test the concept, and then just, I'll figure out the rest later. Like, I just want, I need two houses up and running. Like, that's what I want. And so they told me, okay, this guy, but that guy is very expensive. But you know what? I ran the numbers. The numbers still work, right? Like, I'm in 150,000 and I'm bringing in 40,000, you know, 45,000, 50,000 a year on rent. Like, okay, let's do it. You know what I mean? The number worked. And so I got two houses up and running by, you know, it took me a while, because even when I was studying pad split or co-living, I spent about 3 or 4 months. Like, I didn't just jump in right away because I wanted to make sure I understood all the risks and the business model and kind of everything I was getting myself into. So by the time I got the house up and running, because it did take a few months to remodel and everything, I got it up and running in around January-ish of 2020. Is when they first went live. And so by the time COVID hit, so by March, when the whole country shut down, I had two houses full. So I had about 16 members fully in the house. And I thought I was going to have to evict everybody. And I thought the worst, right? I thought it was going to be, oh my gosh, this is going to be a disaster. Like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to evict all these people or something.
And, then, and go back to W-2, do whatever you're doing, or be into a small business owner.
I'll just buy another business that's like anti, like, you know, that's, you know, that could survive COVID or something like that. You know, I'm like, I didn't know what, I mean, you know, like, it was a crazy
It's
time.
So uncertain. And,
And so, and then, so I figured, okay, I mean, I'm already in it. Let's see what happens for the next 3 months. And what ended up happening was they paid on time and I didn't have to worry about any evictions. And that told me there's more here. Like, this is it. Like, I'm like, this is amazing. Like, I'm getting this crazy returns. Like, oh my gosh, like, how much money would I make if I had like 10 or 15 houses? Like, I need as many of these as I can. So by this time, it was already like late third quarter 2020. And so then that's when I made a determination. You know what? I'm going to buy a lot of houses. I'm going to buy as many as I can, and I'm not going to tell anybody. Like, I'm just going to go and do this and not going to tell anybody about what I'm doing. And like, it just so happened all real estate investors had the same idea. For some reason, everyone wanted to buy a house in COVID period, and the market just went up, right? It just went through the roof.
Yes,
like, so I was chasing these deals alongside everybody else, like, but not doing co-living, doing some, you know, their other strategies, Airbnb or, you know,
long-term rental. A lot of Airbnb back then, crazy.
You know, so like they, you know, so they had these other strategies, and I was the only one trying to get like these houses for like co-living at the time.
And midterm too was very popular back then.
Was starting to
That's
become,
when that
yeah,
started
popular.
Out. People and talking so, about it.
Yeah. So I chased the market up. I've been buying ever since. So, you know, I so the market, you know, the strategy works.
So moving forward to today, how many doors do you have?
Yeah.
You know, and is everything under pad split?
Yeah. So moving to today, so I've been doing this for about 5 years now.
It's amazing.
I have 150 doors now. I have 150 doors. Most of the, of my co-living properties, they're all on pad split. So my co-livings are all on pad split right now. I do have a few that are like non-co-living that I own, but all my co-living properties are all on pad split right now. And it, you know, it works. Like, I use that platform because it works, and like, you know, they're good at what they're doing, you know, like what they do, which is, you know, filling up the rooms, right? Like, that's that's what they're good
that's
at.
That's it.
You know,
that should be the expectation, right? To just have the marketplace.
And it helps you scale, right? So you get the property on, they fill it, and then you continue growing. And so, which helped allow me to kind of grow faster. And, you know, I do have a property management company now, and we manage 600 rooms here in Atlanta too.
Yes.
And that's
Frank, with all your experience owning co-living, managing co-living properties for other investors, have you seen any change or, you know, like it's people that tenants, let's call or members, did it change? The profile changed? Did the properties change? Did the needs change from 5 years ago, 6 years ago to today? Do you see any changes, or it's always been steady and growing?
Yeah, it's been like, I've never really had a big issue in terms of like demand. Like, I've always been able, like my occupancies, like as I added houses, have kind of been about the same. Now, each area might be a little bit different, right?
Okay.
So like each geography. So, but in Atlanta, I mean, it's been pretty steady. You know, like I haven't really had like a huge drop or anything like that. I mean, I have talked to hosts in like other markets that maybe had some difficulties, and you know, that could be more market specific to right. like maybe what's going on there or their house. But like for me, for my experience, in the most part, like in Atlanta, has been pretty steady.
Yeah. So for you, like if you were to say like, okay, so what is the profile of your tenant? What people that yeah. rent your rooms? Who are they? If you can just give us
Yeah, it's very broad. I have like actually a pretty wide spectrum of tenants. So like, you know, you have your seniors, you know, because there are some that like, I actually piloted a program with Padsby before where we tried to do a house that was all like seniors and stuff like that. And,
I've heard of those.
It was great. It was just because PadSplit does a lot of their bookings through online, like electronically, so it was harder for them to fill because
the technology, that was the
struggle. But I mean, you know, so I have seniors, I have students, you know, I have like, you know, people that work in your people that ordinary people that work in the city, right? So like people that work in retail, that work in warehouses, stuff like that. And you know, and I would say like lower to middle income, you know, people that just kind of want to find an affordable place to live, right? Like like cost of living is so expensive now in a lot of the major cities. And people I talk to people where they wanted to move out, like a lot of kids right now, they'll be living with their parents or something, and they want to, you know, they're old enough, they want to move out, but they just can't afford it, right? Like
right.
apartment nowadays or studios, yeah. like in some cities is as much as 50% or more of your income, right? Like they just can't yeah. afford to survive.
It's the entry, and, right? Like the barrier is yeah. huge. And, yeah. Because, you know, like before, like for somebody that you talk about kids leaving the parents' house, going to college, coming back, getting the first job, right?
Yeah.
Like for you today to afford at least buying or renting an apartment, a studio, it's you need to make at least 40,000, 50,000 to yeah. buy one, 60,000 yeah. up.
Yeah.
So how exactly. can, you know, like it's just amazing. And exactly. I don't think it's going to get any better, right?
No,
like
it's anytime not. Definitely soon. Not. Yeah, not anytime soon. Because even on the, you know, I'm looking at doing, you know, construction now, and just the cost of construction, like you can't get it low enough, right? Like the only ways that you could do it is really co-housing, right? I mean, at least a quicker solution, right? Like maybe over time, over a longer period of time, they'll like get a little bit better. You know, I think that's going to happen through like smaller development, like smaller units and stuff like that.
Eventually.
But like we're the quick solution to be able to provide housing to most people, you know. And so, I think there's a huge runway for what we do and a huge demand for what we do. I think it's more that people don't know we exist. I think that's the bigger problem.
Exactly.
I think people just don't know, like, oh, you could rent a room? Like, you know, like they, because people know, like, okay, I get a group of my friends and then we rent a house and then we share it. Like, you know, that, but they never thought,
it's
like,
it's been around forever. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but no one ever thought, like, oh, I could just like search and they actually have rooms that I could just rent. Like, you know, like, I don't have to find a group of people to like live together with. Like, I just go there. Like, so I think it's a lot of people just don't know that that's even available right now, too. And making it become more popular, and people know hey, this is an option, right? Like you don't have to rent a studio or a one bedroom. You could also rent a room if you know you need a place to stay that's cheaper or more affordable.
Yeah, and you know, I started doing co-living, you know, about last fall because I'm a fix and flipper here in Atlanta. We had a beautiful property, would not sell for the price that we wanted. We said, let's hold it, and then we started doing co-living. And I mean, the first one, as an investor, I was kind of anxious, right? Because you're like, okay, what kind of people they're going to be living my property? What are they going to do with my property? What is PadSplit? How far, you know, how much management I need to put into the you know, because I've done short terms. I've done midterms. So I know hospitality. I know those things. And, you know, we know the rehab part. So our only anxiety is going to be like, okay, I'm going to come here and section out the entire house. We went from 4 bedrooms to 7, built another bathroom. So how are we going to do all of this how about if it doesn't rent? What if, yeah, like, there's so many, yeah, anxieties? And I know, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that are buying holder like me, doing things. And if you buy properties to do long term in last two or three years, you're not cash flowing. I know, because, yeah, I bought a few properties, it's not cash flowing. If, yeah, you're doing loans, it's, you know, like traditional loans, it's very hard to cash flow. And then you get co-living, and then you start seeing the possibility of, you know, the income and our first property, that one itself, when it's fully booked, we make about $3,000 a month.
Yeah.
Net. That's net. That one, yeah, was good. That's what I tell people. Like, every property is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
And then we got our second one. That one we do 2,000. And then we got our, yeah, third one and another 2,000. So we're sitting here 4 months, 5 months later with a cash flow, like real cash flow of about 6,000 a month. I mean, yeah, when can you do that?
Three
and then keep properties. Yeah. Three properties, if yeah, that's what you want to do, that's what it takes for you, maybe, yeah, Franco, back then you say, okay, 3,000 is enough for me to do my living today. I can do this, you know, like it doesn't require a lot. It does require learning, because there's a lot of moving parts. And I want, yeah, you to tell me, you know, like, because you've been doing so many properties, I'm sure you, yeah, have a good system, or,
yeah,
what you see investors doing wrong,
yeah,
from your experience, how, you know, can you dig into that a little bit, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, because there are a lot of steps. Like, it's not like your typical long-term rental, right? Because if you do a long-term rental, you come in, okay, you just, you know, you do the renovations and then you put it on the market, right? Like,
it's like,
okay, one step here, boom, then you're ready on market. With us, it's a little bit more, there's a little bit more involvement, right? Because you want to choose the right location. Each market's a little bit different. So, like, do you need to be near public transportation, right? Like, does this house, like, how many rooms am I able to put into this house, right? And so in terms of maximizing, right, because you have to balance the cost and things like that. And you want to make sure you do the rehab correctly. And then you have to decide on the furnishings, right? Like, okay, how, yes, am I going to furnish it, right? Because you don't necessarily have to go like Airbnb route, right? Like, I'm not necessarily putting accent walls and putting, you know, adding all these nice little
lights and, yeah,
co-living. Yeah, you're not making it like a high-end co-living property, right? Because, you know, it depends on your clientele. There are hosts that try to do that, but it just depends on your style. And, you know, and then financing these, like refinancing them, you know, making sure you're doing it right. So understanding, mm-hmm, the strategy. And so there's a lot of little things that could go wrong that you want to keep in mind, right? Because if you choose the wrong location, or, you know, you do the rehab incorrectly, you might kind of find yourself stuck at a certain point, or overpaying, or the numbers, like when you underwrote were find out incorrect, you know what I mean? And you thought you're going to make a certain amount of money, but find out like, oh no, you didn't. And so those are some of the issues that you run into. Me, I like to, so my strategy of choice right now, and it does change. So over the last 5 years, I actually had to change my strategy like about four different times.
That's nice yeah, to people to understand. It's fine, you know, it's fine to change, to pivot, yeah, to, yeah, change even the way that you buy, you know, like, yeah, it's fine. It goes with the economy, you know, exactly, economy doesn't go like this. Yeah. It goes like this. So you got to adapt. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, you have to adapt to like what's happening. Like the last few years, a lot of investors that maybe haven't bought a lot of properties don't know. It's not really been that easy a market, right? Because, mm-hmm, we've been to a period where we had the lowest interest rates to the period of the highest interest rates within the last like 40, 50 years. You know what I mean? Like, we went from the lowest to the highest within like a 5 year period. You know,
yes,
within dealing with also high prices, and, you know, so, you know, in the market changing, you have different markets that are shifting. Like, you have markets like Austin that had the big drop, and or Washington D.C.
Yes, and Florida too, right? Florida, Texas, yeah, Florida. And
you know, and they were having insurance issues. So, like, there's, yes, a lot happening right now, yeah, that a lot of people don't know, and so you have to kind of adapt to what is happening. You know, and what's great about what we do is the opportunity is so big that you're, and it's so flexible that you could adjust to what's happening, right? You're able to adjust. Like I have, so like my one of my houses, the lowest interest rate I have is 3.75, and then my highest interest rate I have is 9%. Right? And the 30-year fixed, okay, that's not a hard money loan. That's like a 30-year fixed loan, okay? And so so I bought houses all throughout.
And you works. Still like make I have, money.
I still right? have it, right? Well, yeah. No, so on the 9%, it's a different strategy. And that's where you have to kind of know, right? Like okay. I bought that. So that one, I am negative cash flow on that. I am negative about $500 a month. Yeah, I am a negative cash flow on that. But, because remember, it's in a market. So that one's in my Florida house, but it's a high appreciation market. Okay. So my strategy is a little bit different. I'm in a different position too, because I'm also taking advantage of the tax write-off. But that right. I adjusted the prepay. And this is where strategy comes in, right? Mm-hmm. Where like I did a shorter prepay. I could refinance that now and be profitable now. But I'm going to wait a little bit because the prepay ends. I shortened the prepay ends in December.
But so is that a co-living or long-term?
That's a co-living. I turned it because it was supposed to be a midterm rental, but it didn't pencil. By the time I was done, the market changed. So this is where like, oh, okay, I'm going to do it a co-living. So a midterm rental, I'll be losing my shirt, right? As a co-living, I reduce my loss because I could sell it. Like I could have sold the property and because I bought that property for $260,000. I put $50,000 into it. It appraised for $550,000.
Wow. So
I could sell it. Like I could sell it right now.
Yeah. Money off. When did you buy it? Like 2 years ago?
Last year. Yeah, I bought it last year. Yeah, I bought it last year. And so... but I like the area. I like the potential. I wanted to hold it. Because then what I learned was like because of my initial start, I started out on the right foot in real estate. I learned that holding properties, like it's nice flipping, it's nice holding, like you make these little spreads, but if you're gonna make real money, like real wealth, you hold it. Hold it. You hold as much as you can. And that's why I hardly sell any of my properties as much as possible. I just keep all, like I try to keep all of them.
Yes.
You know, I love that. So like now I have about almost 30 properties now and I just try to hold all of them. Right. Like because over time appreciation. So with this one, you know, I might refinance it. I'm waiting for the right timing because I want to see kind of right now I could get rates as low as 6 with some of the brokers I talk to right now.
Yeah. And so, it's coming down. Right.
Yeah, so I have a 3% today. Spread.
Yeah, today, March 19th. Yes.
Yeah, and that's why. So if I go from 9 and I refinance it at 6, I'll be cash flowing nicely. You know what I mean?
Awesome.
So, yeah. So, but you know,
I'm hoping when the refi time comes, you know, and everybody's refined. Right,
like, because my prepay ends in December, so I'm not in the big rush. Or that just let me see where the rates go. Right. Like,
and you know, it would be worth for you to refi now if you know.
No, I could. Yeah,
if paying for the penalty, right? The prepayment. Yeah.
And I mean,
prepayment. If you want
to. It's only a few months. Because this one is a flat prepay. Here. So this one's like a 5% flat. So I might wait out.
Oh, gotcha.
But this is where like strategy comes in, right? So, but anyways, so like with that one, you know, it's a different style and I'm in a different position. That's why like when I work with some investors, your goals, your plans, like your situation, that all plays a part, right? Like, because then, your goals might be different than my goals, right? Like my goals now are different, right? Like I don't buy houses for cash flow anymore because I have a good amount of houses that cash flow. And so I do it more strategically. I need tax deductions and I need, you know, I need other things that like, you know, other investors may not necessarily need, right? Like I need to buy a certain amount of houses every year for my taxes, you know? So like, you know, so I'll buy things differently than like you should.
Frank, like from your experience, what would you tell like somebody's out there, you know, like maybe a buy and hold investor that only does long term and want to try something, or maybe somebody that has been, you know, doing Airbnb for a while and, you know, Airbnb has been kind of like, you know, in a downslope, you know, from a lot of markets. Well, you know, even middle term haven't been, because the problem with those, especially middle term, long term, is the vacancies, right? If my tenant leaves on my long terms, because I do have long terms in Atlanta too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a month, 2 months that kills all my net profits. So for those long term, let it sit, put it there. But for people that are really looking for cash flowing properties, why should they do co-living? I mean, we don't want to tell them, but we do want to tell them because it's great.
I know. So co-living, like, so first is, it's worth a try, right? Like, so if I have a portfolio, let's say I have a few long-term rentals already.
Yeah.
You're in the best position to try it, yeah. Right? Because then you probably have a lower cost basis. Like, think of it, like, your risk is so much lower than, like, if I, me on a new house that I'm buying, right? My cost is much higher than you, that if you bought a house like 10 years ago that you got as a long-term rental and you have like extra rooms, like,
exactly,
like, one that's room might cover your
very
cost.
Good point. Like, yeah, yeah, very, like, good
have,
point.
Yeah, you have the least, you have the least amount of risk, right? And if it doesn't work, then just put it back as a long-term rental. You don't like it, put it back as a long-term rental, you know? And so you could always start small and see if it's for you, because it's not for everybody. Like, the truth is not for everybody, right? Because then you are really more involved, right? There is more to,
because
it.
Because it's a business, right? It's a business. Like, it's not something that you're going to put there and then, for example, pet split, you know, which is one, you know, what it is, what Airbnb is for short terms. Pet split is the only one now, right? That does the market. That's a place where people go to rent, right, the rooms.
Yeah.
But they're not going to be managing the property for you. They're not going to be managing the, you know, you should be doing all the screening.
Yeah.
They're going to collect payments, right? They're going to screen. They're going to do their screening. They're going to be there to support.
Yeah.
And then I tell people all the time, like, if you go into the pet split and you put yourself as a host or and start setting up an account, there's so much learning there as far as the management part that, you know, like, people don't realize it. And they start looking at the map, start seeing what areas people are, you know, there's more co-live and see if that area would be good for you. Run your numbers, right?
Yeah,
I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
I actually experimented, like, in going into a lot of the areas, and each market.
I love that
market's different.
I love the fact that you experiment.
Yeah, because then, like, when I started, there was no information. Like, I didn't, like, the only way for me to learn and know is for me to do it, right?
Yeah.
And I, like, doing a lot of different businesses over time, you kind of gain, like, you know, you learn how to kind of analyze. I knew my risk before I do it. Because then I felt my upside was high, right? Because if I trade this market, it's like, oh, that works. I could put 5 houses there, right? Like, oh, that market works.
Right.
5 houses there. Like, so, but then my downside's limited, right? If it doesn't work, then I'll just sell the house. It's because it's not like I lose my house. Right? Like, I still own my house. Like,
no.
If it doesn't work, then I just sell the house.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, I, you know, I take a little loss or whatever. But, you know, that's how business works, right? Like, if you're going to run it, like, but then I learned a lot of different things along the way, like how to maximize your rehab, how to, you know, choose locations, like what were like, how important is parking? You know, like all these different things that I needed to kind of learn. And the only way for me to learn, because no one's telling me, like, even Patsbury didn't know. So, like, I had to do it because they're just a platform, right? Like, just do the marketing. That's all they really know, you know, and do the rent collection. That's it. So I had to kind of figure it out all on my own. And so I experimented. I have big houses, small houses. Like, I have houses that are 10 bedroom, 4 bedroom. Like, I did a lot of different things to learn as much as I can about it. Today, I'm still experimenting.
What seems to be working for you? Like, I know you heavy so, here in Atlanta market. You know,
I know, like,
how big of a house or,
you know,
or,
and,
you know.
And this, I know you guys might not like this answer, but, like, everything works for me. Yeah,
but I love it. I mean, at the same time
that
people might hate, but it's what there's not to love, right? There's not a recipe that you say use this recipe here; it's gonna work, right?
That's what's so amazing about it, right? Like, it really comes down to, as long as you do the underwriting correctly and the numbers work,
yeah,
like, it works. You know what I
mean? So underwriting is still the same, right? The underwriting for,
like,
you know, of course it's
going to overpay, right? So, like, the basic economics still have to work, right? Like, you can get a 4-bedroom and pay $500,000 for it. Like, then and then rent it out for like $1,000 a week. Obviously the numbers don't work, right? Like,
right.
As long as you do it and then things make sense, then it works, right? Like,
because
then the demand, like, because if you think about it, right? Like, because then when I started out, I was starting out in, like, you know, the D-class neighborhoods. That's where I started, right? I was in the C-D-class neighborhoods because you would think, okay, low to mid-low income people, like, where are they? Oh, okay, the C-D-class neighborhoods, right? So you got to go where your demand is. But one day I was wondering, does it work in the A-B-class neighborhoods? Let me try. Right? So I put a house in the A-B. And guess what I found out? It works there too.
So, and who are they? Yeah,
but if you think about it, like, okay, if you have somebody that works in the in an A-class area, right, very expensive houses.
Yeah.
Well, where are those people going to, like, the people that work at your Starbucks, where are they going to live? The people that work at Chick-fil-A or, you know, at all the restaurants or Target, where do those people live? They live far away. They have to take a bus in. They have to go there. Like,
oh, my God, teachers, too. Yeah, you teachers, know, the same
like,
thing.
So, like, wouldn't they want to live closer to their work? And if there's an option for them to live closer to the work, that they would?
Yes.
And I found the answer is yes. Right? The only reason why they don't do that is because they don't have an option. They don't have a choice. And so there's demand there, too. There's demand everywhere.
But Franco, do you, because I'm, you know, like my properties, at least in Atlanta, my buying holds are all in areas A and maybe B, my long terms.
Yeah.
But I never really thought about, because you were thinking about, hey, if you buy and hold invest, why don't you make one of those properties into co-live and see what happens? I started thinking about it, but it did not underwrite. Because I get such a good rent, you know, but those are properties that I bought, you know, no, that I've had for 20 years, not the ones that I bought in 2 years. But
because you have to mix it, right? Like, it's not every house makes sense to do as a co-living, right? Like, you gotta, like, hey, like, if I could get, so, like, and I'll be, like, I'll take you, like, how I analyze it, kind of like what you're analyzing. Like, if I could get a house where I don't have to do co-living and I get, let's say, $3,000 a month rent. Let me just say. Right?
Yes.
And then I have the same house and I do it as a co-living and I still get $3,000 a month rent or maybe $3,500. I might just keep it as a long-term rental. I might not do it as a co-living because the extra $500, do I want to deal with more of that work? Do I want, like, this one is just one family? Like, you could balance that. Like, so you don't have to make every single thing.
No, but
and that's why I have some houses that are, like, not co-living.
It's impressive. Those houses that I have lately, you know, I've owned this property for, like, 10 years, 15 years. Yeah. You know, like, my mortgage is low. I haven't done any of the refi on those because I want to, you know, I want to exit, you know, I want to do other things. Yeah. Anyways, but those properties in the last 5 years, you know what happened?
What happened?
It's kids, like young professionals that make 80,000, 60,000, find the jobs after they go to, you know, to UGA, come to Atlanta, they get their buddies. And they live right in the city, you know, like my properties are right here. And that's the way it's been on all of them.
Yeah.
All guys. And then one moves out and then we do an amendment for the other one moving back in. But of course, I haven't done the build more rooms and make it. But they love it. And I'm like, it's working for me. It's a little bit different. Yeah. But it is a form of co-living, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I see the demand is there. But I don't see, so you're saying that you've done some on class A. Are those coming, those tenants coming from Pet Split, or are you doing a different marketing?
Pet Split. Yeah, no, those are
Pet Split.
Yeah, they find them on Pet Split too. Yeah,
that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It works there too. It works everywhere, like all over it. I have houses all over Atlanta now. It works in all the markets.
And that's so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, if you just think about it, right? Like, because, like even here in Los Angeles, we have a housing problem here in Los Angeles, and it's so expensive now. Like, a one bedroom here in Los Angeles is like over $2,000 a month. You know, for one bedroom, you know,
crazy.
In some areas it's $3,000 a month, and it's crazy for like a little apartment. That's like a one bedroom apartment. Like, how are people gonna?
But are you doing co-live in California or
not yet? Now. So Pat Smith has opened up Los Angeles. They did open up here. You know, so it is. You know, I have a few plans on something I'm working on doing here for Los Angeles. I think I might do it a little bit differently. It's still co-living, but it's gonna. I think I have a different plan for LA. You have to do it kind of a little bit differently because LA does have a lot of regulations and things you have to comply with, but they are open to it. LA will allow co-living here, and so you just got to do it right, you know. You just kind of have to do it a certain way, you know.
But tell me something that you see, like share something that you see, because you teach, right? You mentor people. What do you see, like, the mistakes that when you talk with investors, what are the mistakes that you see they making the most?
Yeah, so the biggest mistake I see, the number one most common mistake, is their underwriting. Like,
okay, so it all goes back to the underwriting.
Yeah, because then, like, that's the most important, because that's the hardest one to fix.
Yes. Right?
Because, like, you choose the wrong property, or you buy it the wrong way, or you paid too much for it. That's hard to fix. Like, you can't. There are ways to fix it. I've come up with this.
For you, like, if there's anything like a napkin math, is there anything that you develop that say, you know,
it's pretty basic. It's still the same, because where the mistake comes in is, like, for example, like, they think they could put more rooms than they thought. So, like, they underwrote it with 9 rooms, but then, you know, but they can only do 7 rooms. Yeah, that's a
they bring the contractor in, because, and then they're like, no, we're not able to do this.
So it's always like on the underwriting, because then, like, they don't, I mean, to be fair, they don't know what they don't know, right? Like, you don't, like, so if you're doing it for your first time, or maybe you did some other type of rehab, like, you don't know, because you've never been in this business before, but, you know what I mean? So, like, so it's not their fault necessarily. It's just, it's a beginner mistake. So you're paying tuition, right? Like, because you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, or sometimes I see them where they overpay for a property, right? Like, it's like, oh, it's going to generate all this cash flow. They overpay. And then that market, they can't get the rent that they thought they could rent. Like, I have somebody now that is in that situation.
I know. It's a little complicated, right? Because you know, you need to have resources.
Yeah,
it's nice to have a good networking. Like, you know, I tell everybody, if you're walking through a property, get a contractor to go there with you until you learn. Go to PetSplit page. Even if you don't want to use PetSplit, but go there as a guide to see the rooms, what they require for rooms, and then you can have an idea, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of those things can be, you know, like, as long as they know and they use their resources, it could be avoided, right?
Yeah. You could minimize at least.
Mitigate.
Sometimes it surprises on the way, but at least you're able to reduce, like, the big ones, right? Like, that's the big one. Like, because you can't, like, if you overpay for a house, you can't fix, like, it's hard to fix that, right? Like, it's, you know, you're kind of,
oh,
like,
my goodness.
You know,
because it's very important. I think the most important process, like, everything real estate is buy. Yeah. When you buy, that's when you make the money. And underwriting, right? Underwriting is not only the numbers, guys. It's just like, find out, you know, how you're going to get the business plan, how you're going to make that getting to the cash flow that you wanted to do. And then, you know, like, using other people's money. How do you do that? And you know, and there's...
Well, that also adds another level to it, because, like, and that's where knowing the strategy comes in. That's why when I kind of work with some people, like, and I help them kind of figure out the strategy, because, like, I can get 100%. So, like, right now, like, I have lenders that could give me 100%. Like, so I get 100% purchase, 100% rehab. So I could get full 100% refinance.
Nice.
But there are repercussions to that. It sounds great. But in a high interest rate environment, I actually still opt to putting in capital, like, putting money in the deal, because when you do full leverage, you know, you have those people like, oh yeah, I do full leverage. It's like, oh yeah, don't use any of your money. It sounds great, but then you're actually paying a lot for that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, when I do a deal like that's fully leveraged like that, you could easily give up $50,000 in equity. And it's not equity, because when you refinance it, it's actually your money. So you're actually paying like $40,000-$50,000 because of all the little fees and then the closing costs and doing it twice. Like,
that's so true.
So you gotta, like, I actually went the direction where now I just use private money lenders. Like, I have like a line, I just pull and I just pay it all cash. Like, it's less. Like, I actually use less. I mean, it's leverage in a way, but a little different type of leverage mixed in with, like, more equity. Some of my own capital, and you know, just because of the environment, it makes more sense. But that's where you kind of, like, adapt to, like, what's happening.
But that's the best. Like, for us, it's been the best model, right? Do the rehab, force appreciation, refi. I mean, you can come in with little money, and leave money, little money on a deal, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, that if you don't know rehab, if you don't know how to forecast a lot of stuff, it's not for you. Maybe you should go with a normal loan or do a creative, do a sub two, yeah. the lower entry, you know, a good PITI, so yeah. you can get into the business, and then you can kind of be more, you know, start trying other things, and then yeah. getting more into the business. Because if yeah. you get into the business, like, well, let me rehab this, let me do the refi, and then even for the refi, there's a lot of stuff that we need to do to make yeah. sure the loan goes through, so there's they don't a charge a 9%, a 12%. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff there that yeah. we've learned, and you know, I do loans too. So,
yeah.
and then how to utilize private money lender, how to get out yeah. there and have a nice product, and you know, but everything starts from your first one. That's what yeah. if people are doing your first one, do your first one, learn as much as you can. Yeah. Get out there, use your resources, pay people to help you if that's the case. You know, like, yeah. you know, we do a lot of stuff here in Atlanta, do rehab, we do setup, we have the whole yeah. process, you know, property yeah. management. You have property management in Atlanta too, in case yeah. they need more, you know, or wait yeah. until you have, you know, a few properties and then hire property management.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. Especially if you want to, like, what your goal is, right? So if your goal is,
yes.
like, so before I even had my property management company, I used a different property manager when I was first starting, because my goal was acquiring, like, I didn't want to yeah. spend time managing, because there's a lot of time that goes to managing these.
You're right.
And so, like, I wanted to just, and at that time, because it was like COVID period, I knew appreciation was going to come. I knew. So I didn't want to, like, I just head to the ground and just get as many deals as I can, and I pass it to them, and then you manage it.
Yeah.
Right? Just boom, 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 boom.
You worry about and scaling. So, let me build. Yeah.
Like, I knew what my business was. My business was acquiring assets and then making money off the appreciation and cash flow. That was my goal, right? And as long yeah. as the numbers made sense with the property manager, I didn't care about anything else. And
yeah.
so for those type of investors, property manager makes sense. If you're looking to, like, no, I wanted to kind of replace my income, have a little bit something on the side or whatever, get a couple
that's
houses.
That's your job,
then,
yeah.
you know, then you could do that, right? That you don't need yeah. a property manager. You could just manage it yourself, and you know, if you want to. But, you know, we have a lot of clients that are also like doctors, professionals, like they just want to own real estate, things inside, don't want to deal with it. You know, those are the ones that, like, I think, you know, fit us. But we also able to help a lot too, because we have a lot of information. We manage a lot of houses. In Atlanta, at least. And so,
right.
And you could do the same even with a good property manager in other states. But, like, you know, there's a lot of information we have. We know what rates you could get. We know kind of like what the demand is,
yeah.
we know what the problems are. Like, we have a lot of info. So we could be a really great resource for our clients.
And Frank, when you're talking to your client for you yeah. know, the PM side, that property management, what do you tell them? Like, if they do in the pet split and then hire you guys to do the yeah. people management, the property management, what is the percentage that you tell them when they underwrite the deals?
Oh, so like, so they take into account pad splits.
8%, right?
8%, yeah, plus yeah. the booking fee. And then ours, we actually do ours differently. I actually don't charge a percentage. So we charge by the room. So,
okay.
And it's a little bit different. And the reason why we do that is we don't like to make things complicated for our clients. We like them knowing what the cost is up front. So we charge $75 per room for our management. But it's not just the management side. We included the, because we wanted it to be predictable. So, you know, kind of roughly every month, like what you're spending. So we also included, what do we call it? Pest control. So we have pest control, quarterly pest control is included as like part of our cost. Like a lot of property, because what happens is a lot of property managers, they'll charge you a percentage, but then have all these other stuff, like they charge you that you didn't know.
Right? Yeah.
Like, you don't know how much it costs for this, how much it costs for like,
yeah.
So when you get your statement, you don't know, like you're always surprised. Like, oh, that's, I thought I was making a lot more money than what happened. Like, you know, we don't like that. Like we get clients knowing kind of like what's happening with their properties and portfolio. And I think a lot of our clients, based on the growth that we've been experiencing, we've been bringing on a lot of clients. They like that, right? Like it's just predictable. It's easy. And, you know, we're more investor focused. So it includes the pest control, includes the room turn. So like if a member goes out, a lot of property managers would charge you every time they send out somebody to, you know, to turn a room. So we
yeah.
include two room turns, we include monthly visits to the property, so we visit the properties every month.
Wow. That's
which
good.
Is very important in these type yeah. of properties. It's much more hands-on than a long-term rental. And so
oh, yes.
So we check all the rooms. So in our agreement, we check all the rooms every month, and we check the common areas every month. So if we see something that, you know, we need to take care of right away, or we have a need to have a serious conversation with the tenant
so you email everybody, let them know, hey, we're gonna be doing our monthly maintenance walkthrough, and then so they can, you guys can go into their rooms and to your
and just look. And just check, because we had situations where there's like a hoarder in the room or something like that, like, you know, stuff that we don't want to keep in the house. And so if you don't visit the house, then you're never going to know. And so we want to catch those right away.
But for underwriting, anybody underwriting that do pet split plus a property management, would you say like would be what, 12% of the underwrite monthly
with a percentage? I think the percentage is like around 14.
14, that's right. I do mine 15, yes.
Yeah, 14.
Because even though we do the property management, because, you know, we have a business, but I still wanted to make sure that number is there.
Yeah, and then, I would say around 14 or 15% is perfect for that, and it accounts for all that.
The 10 days that pet split get from the host, right? The first 10 days.
Including the booking fee. Like, I think that kind of is a good percentage. It's not exact, but it's good enough. Like, you're not going to be that far off. Like, it's you won't get you in trouble. Like,
that's what I hear. That's pretty good. But it's been fantastic. I mean, we've been talking. I will talk all day long. I want to ask you a lot more questions.
Yeah.
But it's been amazing. How can people find you, Franco? And I'm going to put on the notes, you know, on the show notes. But
yeah, please. Thank you. I appreciate it being here. You could find me. I have a website, cohousingsherpa.com. So if you're interested, and one thing I do too, if like you wanted to do co-housing in Atlanta, like Atlanta is my main market right now. We are looking to expand into Texas and Florida right now too, actually.
Nice.
Both on the property management side. But there, if you're interested, like if you want to get into co-housing or you want a second opinion on a house, I actually do that right now where, I could give like a second opinion. We could go deep dive on that particular house for like an hour, or we could kind of talk about co-housing for an hour.
So those are consulting fees, right? You put in, everything's on the website.
Yeah, it's all on the website. I do that there. I also, like, if you want to do like something deeper where you want to really build a portfolio, kind of work together in co-housing, I have that too, where I have a mentorship where I do that with some people as well. You could also email me at Franco, Franco, at cohousingsherpa.com. And you could also reach me there. Yeah.
Okay, perfect, fantastic. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I love
being here. Okay, bye guys.
Bye.